last word
with Life Pharmacy. Over 100 local pharmacies nationwide that are always here to help. Life Pharmacy. Live better together.
It is time for the last word in the US. We've got lots to talk about. Trump's crackdown on crime. What's potentially going to happen around the National Guard in Chicago. The Democrats are holding their summer meeting at the moment. We've got the Maxwell transcripts which are out. Potentially, Trump could be meeting with the leader of North Korea. And also, the story which we're going to kick things off with, which is the removal of the Federal Reserve Governor Lisa Cook. Delighted to say we've got Cal Thomas and Mary McKeown with us. And that top story that we're kicking things off with is that the US President Donald Trump says he will immediately remove the Federal Reserve official Lisa Cook from her position. It is a major escalation in his battle against the US Central Bank. He said there is, quote, sufficient reason to believe that Cook had made false statements on mortgage agreements and has cited constitutional powers which he say allow him to remove her. In response, Cook has said that Trump does not have the authority to fire her and that she will not be resigning from her position. Let's hear then from the Commerce Secretary, Howard Lutnick. This is what he had to say on CNBC, speaking about the Lisa Cook situation.
The issue is a federal government, a governor of the Federal Reserve, literally signs her name and commits mortgage fraud, right? It's alleged that she's committed mortgage fraud, and she says, I'm not going anywhere. Well, the crook always says, I'm not going anywhere. And why would anybody defend that? The real question should be, did she commit mortgage fraud, yes or no? And if you did commit mortgage fraud, please get out of the federal government, get out of the seat of the governor of the Federal Reserve, and go away. You don't deserve to be there if you've committed mortgage fraud.
Now, important context to this is that Cook was appointed by Trump's predecessor, Joe Biden, back in 2022 as well. Marion, this situation, neither side is going to back down by the sounds of it.
Well, I think that Lisa Cook may actually have the law on her side unless they can establish that there's been some serious wrongdoing, which so far we've seen no evidence of. Let's just put this in context. As you mentioned, Lisa Cook was a Biden appointee in 2022. These positions are for, I think it's 14 years. So she should be in that position until, I believe it's 2038. Now, she is a black woman. She's an economist. She's in Harvard and in Stanford. She's hugely respected. There are 12 governors on the Fed board. She is one of the 12. Seven are appointed and five are from the heads of regional banks. So what Trump is clearly trying to do, and he's got two who are already clearly on his side that he's stacked the deck with, he's trying to replace her. He doesn't want her in situ until 2038 and get people who will do his bidding. Now, the damage this is doing to the American economy, to America's reputation, to its reputation as a centre of finance, as a country of laws, as a country where you know, business is done properly and legitimately, is just astonishing. But I think that the problem is here, Trump has, for want of a better word, a clown called Bill Pulte, who is currently the head of the Housing Finance Bureau. He was a big Trump donor. He's a guy whose family are a bit like the Trump family. They build sort of crappy homes a lot, you know, in their early startouts. So the Pulte Company is a home building company. And he's a Trump lackey. He's been tweeting. He's also responsible for claiming that Adam Schiff, the California congressman, fierce critic of Trump's, also committed housing fraud. He's also responsible for claiming that Letitia James, who of course prosecuted Trump for fraud in the Trump Organization, is also responsible for committing housing fraud, and several other people. So he is using this organization to go after Trump's enemies, to do his bidding, and he's doing it by now. He's the director. He's not sending them a letter, he's doing it by tweet, and then Trump is retweeting it. So these people are being found guilty before they've even been formally notified or asked to provide a response.
Cal, in your opinion, is this Trump overstepping the mark? Is this getting unconstitutional? What's your take on it?
Well, I think, again, a little context is helpful. What they are accusing this woman of is getting a lower mortgage on a second home, which he claimed was her primary residence. Now, Marion mentioned Senator now, Adam Schiff of California, who is charged with doing the same thing. A lot of public officials in the United States have two homes because they don't spend all their time in one or the other. And that's perfectly fine. But if you do that, you have to apply in the same way for the same rate of mortgage as everybody else. And the accusation is that Lisa Cook and Senator Adam Schiff did not do that, and therefore they should be held accountable. Now, the president does have the right to fire Lisa Cook and even Jerome Powell, the head of the outfit, but he has to do it, if he does it, as the law says, with cause. The question is whether the lower mortgage rate is a cause, and Lisa has already said that she's going to go to court, which is where everything winds up in America anymore. It always winds up in court, and then appeals courts, and then the Supreme Court. So we'll see what happens. But I think Marion's right. You know, Trump wants somebody on his side to cut the interest rates, which he says are too high, although Powell said just a couple of weeks ago in a speech in Jackson Hole, Wyoming, that September, next month, may be the month in which rates are cut, and that's why the market went up last Friday 900 points.
Well, Cal, I think the cynical would probably say that if this is someone that Donald Trump wants to remove anyway, that he feels that she's an obstruction to potentially bringing down the interest rates at the speed that he wants, or this is someone who, you know, politically he's not aligned with, that you find transgression and probably a reasonably minor one when it comes to, you know, declaration around a primary home versus a secondary home, that that's actually the motivation as opposed to the issue itself.
Well, it is the law. I mean, it is a regulation. And, you know, as we always heard from our friends on the Democrat side, no one is above the law. And it's not fair. It's illegal to claim a primary residence when you don't have a primary residence at that place. So if you're going to have equity before the law, then you have to hold everybody accountable, whatever their party or affiliation is.
Okay, Marion, in response to that, if this is a case of the law has been broken, she can be removed?
Well, not necessarily, because is this cause? Now, the Supreme Court earlier this year even acknowledged, and I think they were firing a shot across Trump's bows, you cannot fire basically people, you know, from the Fed, be it the governor or Jerome Powell, although he wasn't named, without cause. There's a statute, there's a law that dictates that. Now, something that was said to me when I was talking to a friend of mine in D.C. earlier was that there must be a lot of very nervous Republicans and Democrats, because there are, what, 500-odd people on Capitol Hill. They all have two homes. And if they are going to start combing through it, I suspect that there may be more than this. And we don't know at this stage. She says she has done nothing wrong. As I said, she's an economist. She's a federal governor. This may all be just that her name is now being blackened. She's been basically found guilty before any kind of process by Trump. And as I said, his sidekick donor who got a little promotion from Trump to precisely do this. So I don't know, but I think the problem is bigger than this. The problem is the reputational damage to America, the reputational damage, that investors, people who might want to come to America and do business, just in general, that a president will be so vindictive and that he will try to stack the Federal Reserve, the Board of Governors, just like he tried and largely succeeded in stacking the Supreme Court during his first term.
Is that a concern for you, Cal? That, you know, this is meant to be seen as a largely independent body and the Federal Reserve is meant to be the gold standard of everything being done perfectly when it comes to finances in the States, that now this calls things into question.
Yeah. Well, I always love the word stacking used by my Democrat friends when a Republican puts somebody in office, but it's just reasonable and lawful when the other side does it. Look, I'm on record on this show and in my columns as saying I don't like some of Trump's convicted before trial approach. I don't like his name calling. I don't like him trying to manipulate the system. But look, let's face it, all politicians try this at some level. When the Democrats are in power, they're in the White House and they control Congress. They do the same thing. This is one of the reasons people are so cynical about politics in Washington and indeed throughout the country, because they don't think that these people are really serving the public. They think they're serving themselves.
Donald Trump is speaking at the moment, by the way, and we will bring you an update if we hear more on his comments on the Federal Reserve in the next few minutes on this as well. But I just want to bring you another clip.
He's always speaking. Well, he's always speaking. He never shuts up.
It's good content. It's good content, Cal. You know, every day you get something. If it's not him, it's going to be J.D. Vance, and he's going to be talking about things. He's going to give us something to talk about.
I'm not complaining. Gives me plenty to write about, and I suspect Marion, too.
That's for sure. I mean, we could do the last word in the U.S. every single day if we wanted to, just based on sound bites. But if we do get an interesting sound bite, we will bring it to you before the end of the segment. Here is Donald Trump, again, I'm going a little bit back on this one, which was when he met with the South Korean president. This is what he had to say about potentially meeting with the North Korean president, Kim Jong-un.
Kim Jong-un and I had a very good relationship, as you remember, and still do. And when I came in, I didn't know him. We had two summits, but we became very friendly. Respect. It was great respect.
Kim Jong-un wants to meet. When do you want to meet with him?
With
who? So the North Korean leader wants to meet. How soon would you?
Yeah, we want to have a meeting. I like to have a meeting. I get along great with him. You know, you were there. We even had a press conference. He had his first press conference. Kim Jong-un had a press conference. This was a little different press conference. I said, have you done a press conference before? No. And you know what? He did great. It was a great press conference, actually. It was historic. I doubt he's done one since. But I said, would you like to meet the fake news? Because whatever you want to do. And they came in, and they came in like you've never seen anything like it. And then he said, enough. And that was the end of the press conference. That was the end. It ended very rapidly. But I think he had a good time.
All right, so it's Donald Trump speaking about Kim Jong-un and potentially another meeting. So, Cal, he met him 3 times in his first term, says he's got a strong relationship, says he knows him better than probably any other world leader outside of North Korea currently. He's also talked potentially about a Trump Tower going up in North Korea as well. Do we see another meeting happening here?
Well, you know, Trump's idea of friendship is like people's idea of friendship on Facebook. You probably don't know most of the people. I mean, here's a guy who's providing troops to Russia to attack Ukraine, whose side we are supposed to be on. I have no problem with meeting with people. I mean, Roosevelt met with Stalin, Nixon met with Mao and other Chinese leaders. But you have to do it in a way that is smart and intelligent. Just calling somebody my good friend or whatever. This is Trump's major problem that John Bolton, by the way, has addressed on numerous occasions. He has foreign policy by personality, and that doesn't work. Foreign policy has to be conducted by experienced diplomats, people who know history, people who will hold other leaders accountable, and not just photo ops and stepping across a border and saying my good friend and calling him Rocket Man. I mean, that just doesn't work.
Mm. Marion, you've been reading through the Maxwell transcripts from this interview. I've only really seen the headlines in some of the articles that have been up over the last day or so, and probably the main headline has been that Trump was always a gentleman, is what she had said. What have you found in the transcripts?
Can I say very quickly, I'll get to that. I was just shocked and revolted by the fact that people were chuckling along with Trump there about, you know, he's boasting about his little protege, this thug and dictator who runs the most repressive regime in the world, and laughing about the, you know, freedom of the press. And it just really made my hackles go up. So I'm sharing that with you, whether you like it or not. Anyway, back to Ghislaine Maxwell, another savoury character. I went through all 400 plus pages of this transcript, and I was just shocked, literally to my core, not just by what she said. She's clearly a pathological liar. She's clearly a sociopath. She has no remorse about anything other than trying to minimise her own culpability in the situation, but also the deference that Todd Blanche, who is again the Deputy Attorney General of the whole of the United States, who went down to Tallahassee, where she is schlepped down to her, gave her 9 hours of his time with no prosecutor present, and the whole tone was, oh, poor you. It was like they were at a cocktail party. I'm not kidding. It was, you know, she said things that were so outrageous and so egregious. He never pulled her up on them. I'll give you an example of one. Now, one of the things that she said that I got from, there are so many, we could do an hour on this, but I'll be brief. She claims that Jeffrey Epstein, before he met Virginia Roberts, who we know Virginia Giuffre, who died by suicide back in April, who was the incredibly courageous woman who took Epstein and Prince Andrew to task. She claims that before he met her, Giuffre claims that Ghislaine Maxwell recruited her and groomed her when she was a teenager working in Donald Trump's Mar-a-Lago club. And Maxwell claims that before, she claims she had nothing to do with this, of course, but before he met her, there was nothing wrong with him, basically. He was fine. He was just a guy who liked women. So she really blames this teenage girl from a broken home for basically, as it was, corrupting Jeffrey Epstein, that all the trouble started when he met her, and that she, not he, is basically the culprit in the fact that he was one of the most notorious predators of underage girls in American history that we know of. So even the fact that she was say that, that it all started with her. Then she claimed, oh, he was taking testosterone as well. Maybe that's what happened too. She has no culpability. She has no guilt. She claims she did not groom or recruit any of these girls. And there was an instance where she spoke about Giuffre being in London, and this picture, the famous picture of Prince Andrew with his arm around this teenage girl with Ghislaine Maxwell grinning in the background. And predictably, she says it's a fake. It never happened. She was at her mother's 80th birthday in London that weekend. But the flight logs for that flight to London show Epstein, Virginia Roberts, as she was then, and Ghislaine Maxwell on the same flight. And do you think Todd Blanche said, well, why was she on a flight with the two of you? Why were you bringing this 17-year-old girl to London? Nothing. It literally takes everything she says at face value. She has some pretty nasty things to say about Fergie, Sarah Ferguson. She claims she didn't introduce Prince Andrew, but she claims that Fergie was basically trying to date Epstein and trying to push her out of the picture. At the same time, she claims that she was only his underling. She was the sort of grunt who wasn't even allowed to answer the phone. It is despicable. The whole thing is absolutely nauseating.
Yeah, there's some remarks. Sorry, Cal, go on.
Well, I was going to say, I certainly agree with all of that, but she's campaigning for a pardon from Trump. This is why she said that he was that he was a gentleman. Now, I've been called a gentleman, and I don't want to be in the same category as her view of a gentleman, okay? So, yeah, she is despicable. She is a pig. She is a recruiter. She is a pimp. And I'm equally outraged that she got away without any kind of prosecutorial questions. But I don't think there's any doubt she's campaigning for a pardon, and that's why she had nothing bad to say about Trump.
Yeah, some quite remarkable details in there as well. And again, if we're going to dismiss elements, you probably have to dismiss all of it. But she was claiming that Bill Clinton was not friendly with Epstein at all. She also claimed that herself and Epstein were both unable to have sex. She didn't go into detail on her mental condition, but she claimed that he had a heart condition, which meant that he was unable to have sex, and was claiming that that is the reason that they were unable to commit the offences they've been accused of.
That's what we call too much information, Will.
Indeed. But just, I suppose, some of the more remarkable parts of it, they're probably going to grab the headlines along the way. Moving away from the Maxwell transcript then. Interesting situation at the moment, Cal. I mean, the Democrats are sitting in having their summer meeting, and I would say a lot of thinking and planning going on within that party to try and turn things around.
Right, in Minneapolis, and their problem is I almost feel sorry for them because they have no leader, and in a two-party system, we really do need to have a good debate over issues and what works and what doesn't. But they had somebody up there yesterday, a woman who did the virtue signaling thing of saying, we are meeting on land once owned by the indigenous people. I said, oh, well, fine. Why don't you give it back to them? And they have no issues. They can't get away from their biological males in women's sports and women's locker rooms. They can't get away from the open border under Biden that they had. All of these issues are working in Trump's favor, but they have no leader, and they have no issue to articulate. So they have no reason for people to vote for them. And then, as the polls are showing, people, they're bleeding. They're bleeding members of the Democrat Party. They're either moving to independent or to the Republican Party. So they're losing money, they're losing members, they're losing votes, and they have no issues or leader. Other than that, they're doing a great job.
Right, Marion, they lost, crucially, the elections coming off the back of last year. So is a leader going to emerge to be centralized around for the Democrat Party?
Look, I agree with a lot of what Cal said. And Cal, rest assured, I don't think anybody listening to this show or anybody who's ever met you would put you in the same category as Donald Trump.
Okay, so thank you.
I'd just like to get that out there. And I'm also very much looking forward to seeing you this weekend down in Waterford at the Kennedy Summer School. But just getting back to this, Democrats are in a hole. There's no doubt about it. What kind of I find bizarre is every one of them keeps standing around saying, we have to fight. And they keep looking at each other in this sort of circular firing squad going, we have to fight. You have to fight. But nobody is actually leading. Now, I think Gavin Newsom is doing a half decent job. I don't think Americans, by and large, I've always thought Gavin Newsom is seen as a little bit too rich and a little bit too entitled and too much of a Californian vineyard owner for the palates of most Americans. But they want somebody who will fight. And so far, he and J.B. Pritzker, who I think might Americans might be more comfortable with, the governor of Illinois, are the only ones who are really doing anything. But they are having a crisis and they have lost donors. They've lost members. Republicans are picking up a lot of young members, which is really worrying for Democrats. That used to be their stomping ground. I don't agree, however, with Cal that all they're talking about is trans. That is the narrative, you know, that these woke issues are all that they talk about. And Republicans have very skillfully painted them into that corner. What they need to do is, for God's sake, just say, yeah, you know what, we care about trans people. Right now, we're more concerned about the cost of vegetables. Right now, we're more concerned about the way that people are being sent to Uganda or to Alligator Alcatraz. Right now, you know, they're letting Republicans define them. They're at the bottom. And, you know, they keep saying, well, we're at the bottom, so the only way is up. Not necessarily. You know, not necessarily. So they want to watch out.
Yeah. Cal, when it comes to Ukraine and the latest on this, I had to do a double take during the week when I saw J.D. Vance being interviewed and he claimed that World War II was a negotiated peace on all fronts. And I had to think, okay, did he miss the history class where Germany was taken out by Russia? Did he miss the history class where the bombs were dropped in Japan before the World War ended? I don't think they were negotiated positions that ended World War II. Are we going to see an American-led negotiation of the end of the Ukraine conflict with Russia?
Well, both Churchill and Franklin Roosevelt, of course, stated that victory was the only option, not any kind of negotiated settlement. And that's what we had. The United States and our allies achieved victory over Nazi Germany and the Imperial Empire of Japan. Now, Trump has not articulated a similar policy, but the problem is that there's no middle ground in war. You either win or you lose. I don't know what the policy is. I don't think he's articulated the policy. Now, Biden wanted to give them just enough arms to sustain themselves, them being the Ukrainians, and Trump has stepped up some of that, but then his administration has also told Zelensky that you can't attack certain targets within Russia. Putin doesn't have any of those kinds of restraints. So this seems to be an ongoing thing. Once again, Trump is hinting at another meeting with Putin. The first one didn't achieve anything, and I doubt a second one will either, given Putin's stated goal of getting all of Ukraine and then going after the former Soviet satellites. I think you have to take him at his word, and I think you have to have a policy at a minimum, sanctions and secondary sanctions that will turn up the heat on him, or he's not going to stop.
Yeah. Marion, where do you see it going from here?
I think that Trump is effectively aiding and abetting Putin, and that the way this is going and Trump is enabling this is Putin is playing for time. He's saying, maybe I'll meet Zelensky, we'll talk about it over the next couple of weeks, and then maybe he'll come back and maybe he won't, and then maybe he'll meet Trump. And meanwhile, every day he's taking more and more territory in Ukraine. If Trump was serious about this, and Cal is right, there's no middle ground here. Either Ukraine wins or Russia wins. There is no ceasefire or meaningful peace deal. What Trump needs to do and what Biden should have done and didn't do, although he did a damn sight better job than Trump, is put crippling sanctions on Russia, absolutely crippling. And then you give Zelensky everything he needs to win this war, all the weaponry he needs and all the support he needs, because otherwise this is just going to drag on. And every day Russia is encroaching more and more steadily. The fact that the war is now in its fourth year and that Zelensky and the Ukrainian people and their military has managed to hold out against Russia until now is astonishing. But that is not, that situation is untenable in the long run.
Yeah, many bring up FDR and Churchill, you think Yalta, which is in the Crimea, which is where those negotiations about the post-World War happened. The echoes of history coming back round again. Folks, have a wonderful time together having a coffee in Waterford at the weekend. Thanks a million for joining us.
Thank you very much. Bye-bye.
The Last Word on Today FM.